This is St. Louis Public Radio. Support comes from Parrot Corporation. With a commitment to serving the St. Louis community through local partnerships and charitable support, guided by Parrot's core values. More at parrot.com/culture.
Alicia Saunier was no stranger to complicated, controversial pieces of legislation when she decided to tackle the allocation of the money awarded to the city of St. Louis after the Rams left for Los Angeles. The legislation flamed out in spectacular fashion, but Saunier says she still counts the process as a win, and she says it proved to her colleagues that she's an independent thinker. The alderwoman of the 7th Ward joins me next on the latest episode of Politically Speaking. Let's hit the music.
This is Politically Speaking, the definitive show about politics in the St. Louis region.
I thought this was an opportunity to have a new voice in that seat.
And the decisions I make in county government allows me to help people in large groups, and I enjoy it.
We're not using it as a wedge issue. We're using it more as a, you know, what's right for the region conversation.
We need to know what the issues are in our communities in order to address them.
Because people want to see change, and they want to see a St. Louis that works for everyone.
Some days I need to credit, most days I don't. But most importantly, I have to be able to control how this environment is going to evolve.
We knew that in races that have multiple candidates, the only way you win is in the streets.
And welcome to Politically Speaking. I'm your host, Rachel Littman. Joining me today in the studio is
Alderwoman Alicia Saunier.
And she represents the 7th Ward. Remind listeners where that sits in the city.
South City. So if you're thinking neighborhoods, Botanical Heights, Tiffany, the Gate District, Fox Park, Gravois Park, Benn Park West, and Tower Grove East. I give people the big landmarks of Cherokee Street up to St. Louis University Medical Campus.
So you ran for, you're now in your second term, but you ran for that first term in office knowing that you were going to have to turn around again and run in 2 years. Was there ever a moment where you're just like, nah, I'm not going to do that?
Oh, that is so interesting. No, I don't think I ever had one of those moments, actually. I think I had some moments where I had to, you know, lean into my courage and think about what does it mean for me to be here for a second term and what was I willing to wait on or, you know, not push. But I never always knew that I would run again. I just knew, you know, there were definitely some moments with some of the very bold pieces of legislation I did where I knew and I was hearing from a lot of folks, hey, this could risk your political future. And just really, you know, for me, if I'm going to be here, I want to be here because people respect my values and principles.
You had served in elected office before on the school board, but what was the biggest learning curve getting into City Hall and to the Board of Aldermen?
That's hard to answer because if you think about the time that I came into the Board of Aldermen, we had just redistricted. So we had went from 28 wards to 14 wards, which meant that people had larger territories. We had staff for the first time. There was a heavy legislation focus. There were a lot of important issues and bold agendas that had all been talked about. There were a lot of needs in our city and things that I think people have been clear on. I think for me, probably the biggest learning curve in my first term is I just really think that I learned a lot about collaboration and consensus building. I learned a lot about the importance of really listening and how powerful that can be as a leader. So I think my biggest learning curve, outside of obviously every alder person, you've got to learn your department heads, who to call when it's been the certain CSB reports have been sitting for too long, and who to contact for this war capital project to get movement, and you know, how do I confirm this with this neighborhood organization and this zoning variance and this permit, and you know, all the things. But I think the biggest learning curve is really you are on front row and center of having some of the most important decisions in the city, and they impact the entire city. And how do you do that in a way that brings people closer together, but also doesn't neglect the important conversations?
So you mentioned in your first year, you tackled some really big, bold pieces of legislation, got a lot of pushback from them. And one of them was Bill of Rights for the Unhoused that included language exempting them from the prohibitions on public urination and defecation. And it was one part of the bill, but it got the most pushback and the most attention. What did you come to learn about legislating through that experience?
Those bills were, between that and the Rams settlement bill, were my largest growth curves. You know, I think what I learned from that bill is, number one, it's very important when you have some legislation that you're working on, you want to try to give your colleagues a preview if possible. You don't want them to find out about bills, you know, ideally not through the Zoning Commission, ideally not through the press. You want them to learn about that from you, and you want to engage in conversation. Now, that's hard because at that time, not a single piece of unhoused legislation had ever moved through the Board of Aldermen, so I wouldn't say that there was a large appetite for it at the time at all. But that was definitely one of the lessons that I learned. And I would say the other lesson that I learned, and what I think is really important to note, is actually when we had our public hearings for those bills, the room was 50% in support and 50% opposed. So I think sometimes people do just talk about, well, they were, you know, a lot of pushback and there was a lot of opposition. There was a lot of support for those bills. Those hearings are some of the longest hearings we had all session long. People came out at 6 p.m. And we had just a packed room, and it actually was 50-50 in terms of support and opposition. So that taught me a lot as a leader, too. Again, when I talk about the power of listening, you're having to sit and listen to people oppose your bill. And you want to still, for me, seem friendly, and you want to thank them for coming to participate, because all of that feedback can help you with another round of bills. And I don't know if necessarily my colleagues knew that I would be going in that direction, but that's what I decided, that the fact that everyone was engaging and showing up for this conversation, I have to continue it and find out, you know, what can be moved from this.
And so remind me, did any pieces of what was in that big bill from your first term eventually cross the finish line?
I did the infamous Board Bill 227. That was a reform of Platt and Petition that essentially proposed that we require 100% of notification, require that you at least make the neighborhood organization aware, but that you only have to get 33% of signatures to be eligible for your hearing. That bill was 7-4, 7 against, and a present vote. So it was actually the only bill to technically fail on the floor for the entire session. And so obviously there's a lot of lessons in that, but I was extremely proud because a lot of people told me this issue is dead. You won't make any progress with it. It is, this is going to politically kill you. This is not going to work. And so I'm proud that not only did we get a bill filed, get it in committee and out of committee, we got it on the floor, and we were just one vote shy, which to me says that perhaps there is maybe something there to continue. And then the bill that did pass was a zoning bill. And so we no longer have shelters and transitional homes and group homes and boarder homes completely banned in our codes any longer. And that's a really important step, because there actually have been lawsuits against providers based on the grounds that the zoning doesn't allow for shelter. So how can they go here? So that is a step forward.
And there also are always political considerations when it comes down to pieces of legislation, too, and who's going to vote where, that may not be there anymore when if you try a flattened petition again. You mentioned one of the other big bills is one of your legislative learning curves, and that was the handling of the Rams money. Mm-hmm. Was that something you sought out, or how did that even end up as your responsibility?
I think it really came as a result of me chairing a committee of the whole process. At that time, we were talking a lot about, you know, what does it mean for the youngest member of the Board of Aldermen to shepherd this conversation if we do want to make sure that there are some elements in this bill that really push against just the systems we know in our city that are not working and goes against the status quo and is willing to be a little bit more thinking outside the box.
How did you start to approach the negotiations when it became apparent there were going to be two bills out there that both had traction?
It was a challenge. It was very difficult. It's a Herculean task. But obviously, I think I'm a person who I think that the city deserves leaders who will be brave and who will take on challenges and that things have to be done. And I also don't think in our, for me as an elected leader, a win is not passing a bill. A win is building consensus, is building coalition, is getting conversations going, identifying interests. What are the things that we can coalesce around and deliver? So I decided, okay, I will try this Ram settlement. I had no idea there would be a counter bill. I had no idea. That was a time where I was tested the most of how do I kind of put my ego and my individual feelings aside? What does it look like to not get upset with Alderwoman Boyd or any of the co-sponsors because they did a separate piece of legislation, even though I feel like I've just let it process for a year and we still had public hearings coming when the bill was filed. But if it's about the people, then what would stop me and Alderwoman Boyd from having a conversation? Because I have respect for Alderwoman Boyd and she's been serving for a long time. She does represent a community with a lot of disinvestment, and she's an older Black woman who has been here in politics before I was. And so there has to be a way that we can connect. And she actually approached me. to, like, I had kind of been reaching out but not getting a response. And then one day she kind of just called and said, hey, would you like to go grab breakfast? And I said, absolutely. You tell me what time, I'll be there. So for me, I just kind of approached it by centering the people. I had a desire to, we had a portal, we had data, we had information. There was an opportunity to support housing, to support water, to support infrastructure, to support city workers. I very much felt like, okay, these are things that make sense for us to do. And again, like, leaders are not here to sit on our hands. We should do the hard things. St. Louis City has such great needs. We need people who can meet the need, and they will have to do the hard things. We're not going to grow or accomplish anything if we're not. So that was kind of my approach. And it was difficult. You know, it landed. Everybody saw the big ending of it in a way that I could not have expected at all. I mean, I would say that even in that, again, for me, it really tested me to treat people. How I treat people is a reflection of me, and it can't be a reflection of how I feel that others have treated me as a leader. That's going to cost my community that I'm here to represent and move interest forward. And it really got tested in that moment because it was hard. But I feel like those are the moments that test your character. Those are the moments that grow you. And honestly, enduring that was difficult, but it earned me so much respect from my colleagues. It earned me so much respect from my community. It earned me so much respect from the stakeholders in that bill. And ultimately, you know, I think that God works in a funny way. And perhaps it's not the worst thing that that money is still sitting in an interest-bearing account right now.
I got the impression, and I think some others did too, that you kind of got thrown under the bus in this whole process. Do you share that perception?
I think that there was some unfair treatment. You know, at the end of the day, elected officials are people, and the public got to see some of the things that were happening behind the scenes. And I think if I say, was I thrown under the bus, I could say that I got some unfair treatment. And I think just as a board, we did some things to each other, like for all 15 of us, that I don't think we should do, that I hope some of us, you know, all of us should be able to learn. We can treat each other with respect. We don't have to blindside each other. We should not make accusations against each other. Social media is probably not the place where group of elected officials who have a very serious job should be having their conversations, right? I think you learn all of that. And so I would hope that's not duplicated. And so I think that it was unfair treatment. And also, what an honor it was to be the person who got to carry that bill and steward those conversations. And I just tried at every turn to treat that with the respect and honor that it deserved. I tried at every turn to have as many conversations, to incorporate feedback and input, to import what I felt like citizens were saying. And I'm glad that I hope that I got to show my city a model of leadership that they feel that they deserve.
Obviously, people saw the bill meltdown, saw the back and forth on Facebook, saw the accusations. What do you think is the one thing that they're either missing or not understanding about how that whole thing went down?
I think I really wish that people would have talked more about myself and Alderwoman Boyd's collaboration for it. As you know, challenging as it was, sometimes for as chaotic as it was, when have you seen a North and a South, a freshman and a veteran alder stand together at a podium for a HUD's committee meeting for a bill that proposes to move $294 million in agreement with each other? That does not happen. And so that was really exciting, and I wish that that was talked about more. And that's something that I'm really hoping, the ability to build relationships and to find our common agreement is something in my second term I want to focus on even more, because I think, you know, especially with the federal political climate, we just do not have the time to give into the silos, to give into the divides. When we have disagreements, I hope that it is about the policy and not, you know, personal attacks on each other.
How would you say your relationship with some of those main players is today? Alderwoman Boyd, President Green, you know, the people that we really think of as having central roles in that drama.
So the thing about me is that I am a person who feels like, even just as simple as back to April, whatever happened on April 8th, it is irrelevant. April 9th, I woke up in my second term as the Alderwoman of the 7th. So I really don't care who you might have voted for, who you might have donated to. We have work to do. So it's imperative that we are able to get through those difficult moments. And so my relationship with them is great. You know, it doesn't mean, I also think this is a job that it's difficult because you have to learn how to be able to publicly disagree with each other. As elected officials, I represent the 7th Ward. Sometimes I might not agree with the person who represents a different community. I have a different perspective on things just as individuals. And so there were challenges, but my relationships with them, I think, actually have grown from that experience. Again, I would say for me, the benefit of Alderman Boyd and President Green, I think that both of them do see me more as an independent thinker and my own woman. And that is really what I desire. I don't really want to be counted in as just lumped in with someone else. I think that I earned a lot of people's respect as my own woman with my own thoughts and my own brain. And it's never not been true, right? But I think a lot of times, especially for women in politics, if you have women who you come into politics with that you are in relationship with, you share values, people will say, well, you're just a puppet of them. You just do whatever they tell you to do. They wrote those bills for you. You know, they're not, they will, sometimes your own intelligence and ingenuity and leadership will get discounted. And so as difficult as that was, what I found is it allowed all of my colleagues and a lot of my community, it earned me a lot of respect. Whether people agreed or disagreed with what I was trying to do, they respected me as my own thinker, as my own woman, as my ability to separate myself from anyone. Because again, it's about principles and policies, not about the individuals who are proposing it, which I think has not been the case historically in St. Louis city politics.
When do you think the conversation about spending the Rams money will take place? And do you want to be as big of a part of it this time around as you were last time?
Well, if you ask my constituents, the conversation takes place every day. You know, at every neighborhood meeting, again, the city is literally crumbling right now. Like we, you know, it is MSD and some other things, but when you look at a city that's crumbling, when you look at water main breaks that are happening, you know, every single day, block after block after block, when you look at just a lot of the things within our city that really do need to work better, I think naturally, you know, vacancies, different things, people are like, well, the money needs to happen. So I think the conversation will start. Honestly, I would say you probably really won't see anything like serious to conversations probably until after we come back from summer break.
Which is after budget, which is the big bill that sucks up all the oxygen.
Right. And right now everybody's focused on July 1st because we just talked about the basics not working. Well, let's make sure we got enough salt this year. Let's see if maybe neighborhood improvement specialists are able to get some type of take home vehicles. Let's make sure that the health department, who we know is about to get a lot of cuts from the federal government, that they're getting what they're getting. Let's make sure that we keep a budget for the Office of Violence Prevention that was newly established. You know, so there's a lot of things. The building division, how do we get them to the point where they can do inspections as they should be able to do and as residents deserve? How do we get permit reviewers so that people are not waiting so long? What needs to be done with conditional use hearings so that you're not on a docket waiting for months as a business? So those conversations are very much tied to the budget that we passed. So that's taken center. But I think you won't see anything after that. And I did see an article recently that said that Mayor Spencer went down to Jefferson City and she had a conversation with the governor and discussed Ram settlement funds and how to best leverage them.
What are your legislative priorities that you want to focus on for 25-26?
Well, you know, policy and food are my love languages. I'm definitely a girl who I love to think about systems. I love to think about my community has put me in a position where not only can I file a CSB like they can, but I can like potentially impact the system that these things run through. One of the things that I'm really interested in, and I still have a lot of conversation to have around this, but absolutely our procurement processes that nonprofits and small businesses and even unhoused provide, everybody has to go through it, and it can take you up to a year to get reimbursed, which means if you're a small business, do you have $10,000, $20,000, $30,000 to put up front before you get reimbursed? No. That means that there's just a lot of folks in our city who are doing phenomenal work in business, in, you know, in retail, in commercial spaces, in the nonprofit space that just can't go get those funds. And I represent a lot of those smaller businesses and organizations and have seen them. I'm telling them about resources for the city and they're like, oh, I'm not applying for that because I can't wait 6 months to get or a year to get my money back. So that's definitely at the top of my list. Another thing that I'm really interested in is like, obviously our streets are horrible. They are in terrible condition. And I believe in being, you know, I know what folks are feeling and I drive my car down these streets. I would love for us to talk about as a city, what does it look like for utility companies to be held more accountable for fixing the streets? We've had conversations about, okay, from this point moving forward, you need to fix them, which I just want to say, I think it's ridiculous that they know how to fix them back in Ladue. They know how to put them in proper condition in Chesterfield, but they do not know how to do it in St. Louis City. And so I'm glad we started that conversation, but I think there's some conversation about, you know, the streets for the places you've already done work with, how can we talk about you going back and addressing at least some of those? So that's a conversation I hope to have. And then this is not like legislative specific, but I also have the honor of continuing to be on SLDC's board. That's going to be a huge thing. We've got to select a new executive director from that. I think that's really important. I hope to serve on that subcommittee for that. And that just the whole mission is going to be important, too.
In the realm of those small businesses and nonprofits that you're talking about, where do you think are some of the gaps in city services that the city is leaving on the table or filling because of its procurement process?
I have places like the International Institute. I have the MICA Project, an award that I represent. I have
MICA's immigrant rights, right?
Yes, yeah. MICA for immigrant rights. I have the Cherokee Improvement District, which is a slew of small businesses. I represent a portion of the South Grand Community Improvement District. I have other businesses not in districts such as Little Fox or Little Lona's or Crafted. You know, My Marie, who's in, you know, she's on Cherokee. So if you're in a relationship with a small business owner in the city, they're going to tell you that it is a struggle and it is difficult right now. And so for me, of course, one of the things I could do is just make sure that funds that are available to the city, they will at least apply for. And I think as their alderwoman, that's my responsibility. What can I do to make sure those resources can get to them? Because there are many of them. Even when you think about, you know, I'm curious for unhoused providers. We get in a situation with hazard weather where we have to do these pop-up shelters and we say, well, we need you to open up 100 beds and we don't have the money to give them a cot. We don't have the money to order a pizza for them. Those are volunteers that are standing up those operations. You know, I think the city should look at what does it look like for us to do emergency contracts to be able to support those operations. If we don't have the proper infrastructure in place to run it ourselves, and we do have these amazing city residents, many of which are Seventh Warders, who I deeply commend, that are volunteering and have unhoused providers have created this infrastructure from scratch, the least we could do as a city is think a little bit more about how we can get resources from them so that when they're getting a call saying, hey, we are going to have hazard temperature for the next 5 days, we're going to need an additional 150 beds every night, we're not just making that call, but we're able to be a real partner and put some resources on the table.
You got quite a bit of attention in the last election from a PAC with the ties to a lot of developers, construction companies, etc., Democratic operatives who tend to more on the conservative side. I've got theories as to why you got their attention, but I'm wondering what you think about it.
I had no clue. I thought I was a little fish. I was like, I'm too little. I'm just running for alderwoman. There's not going to be a pack that's going to come after me. Like, honestly, I did not have that in my math or even a thought in my head at all, because I had never seen that happen in an aldermanic race on any level, you know, of course, higher levels. So I will never forget waking up and having text messages from residents with this mailer. What was very cute pictures, by the way. I don't know who selected the photos, but honey, they took some from my campaign kickoff that had both myself and Mayor Jones on it. They took another one from the community. And I was like, oh, these are, some people were like, is this a diss? You were so cute. I just put it in the trash. I didn't know that it was a diss. I thought it was for you. To me, I think all of us should be deeply concerned. If there becomes a price tag on democracy, you do not have democracy anymore. And all of us should be concerned, what does it look like when there are specific individuals and specific corporations that, because of the financial resources they have a significant ability to sway and influence the message? Coming from where I come from and seeing our city's needs, I think about what if instead of, you know, millionaires and billionaires coming together to get Democrats out of office, what if they came together to meet the needs of the community? Like, what if this was being invested into some type of municipal endowment fund? What if we were talking about using this money to outsource contracts for our streets? What if we were talking about using this money to help get lead out of the public schools? Like, this really for me, you know? So that is just quite an experience. What I will say is I'm so thankful to my community that I still had an overwhelming win. 67% is something I'm incredibly proud of. And what it did for me is it showed I felt just very loved and supported, because it actually, a lot of folks before that, I think, just weren't as concerned or worried. Thank goodness the Seventh Warders, they don't make their decision from things in their mailbox. They make their decisions from what they have observed of your service. And what I heard overwhelmingly was, first of all, like, you're everywhere. Like, I didn't even know. A lot of people were like, I didn't even know you had an opponent, you know? And then there were others who, you know, you responded to my email. You called me back. I came and testified for this bill you did. You're in my neighborhood meeting every month. I love this town hall that you did. You took the time out to come to my daughter's school. And so I just think, for me, it was difficult because it is a type of attack that I felt like was unfounded. I was glad to see, though, that my community was still pretty clear and that my work has spoken for itself. And it made me proud, honestly, that I had been as bold as I've been, that my values were really clear and there was no guessing, because it's hard to misconstrue what I've done. And I would say, in terms of why, you know, to me, what I will say is I saw that he created a pact that did go after several leaders. Majority of them were Black women. And so I'm not sure if he felt like, oh, in this ward, maybe I can get a 2-for-1. And also think maybe he feels that whatever it is he feels aligned with, I'm not aligned with. I'm not sure what that is. I know for me, equitable development is really important. I know one of the bills I'm really proud of is the TADA, Tax Accountability and Development Act, where developers have to pay taxes or be on a payment plan in order to receive incentives. I know I've done some great projects in the 7th Ward, been able to support some great projects in the 7th Ward around housing and development and building businesses out. And so I don't know if he views himself as unaligned with that. But again, I think what I took it as is, you know, whatever it is that a person who you've never met that decides a group of people put thousands of dollars into coming against you, you know what? You knew my name. And you knew my work, and you felt strongly enough about it to put thousands of dollars behind it. It's a challenge, and that's what campaigns are for. I'm gonna knock every door and talk to everybody I can. Let's have the conversation. And you know, as far as why, he has a construction company. I know why he stated he did it for others. I know what my values have been in development, and I'm only left to, you know, make assumptions. But I would hope that, you know, people should take the time to get to know another person and not make assumptions about their values. And I also think what's really important is, regardless of who the attacks were, who was making them, or what PAC was saying what, my principles and values are really consistent and really clear.
You alluded to this a little bit, but the results of the 2025 election do mean that for the first time in decades, there is no representation of the Black community on the Board of Estimate and Apportionment. Where do you think the role is for women of color or people of color on the Board of Aldermen to fill that gap?
You know, I think that there are a number of reasons that races go the way that they go. And, you know, I think it's really important to never discount, you know, sexism and racism. But I have for myself, if I were to get borrowed down and the fact that those things exist, I would never move forward. So I just have a mentality of, those things existed before I was here. They're going to exist while I'm here, and they won't be the reasons that I'm not successful. I think in terms of the place for people of color and women of color, we still have a place in leadership. We still have a place in the city. We still have a right to be a part of the decision making. And what we have to do is be self-reflective, figure out what went wrong. And as a younger leader, it is important for me. I want to take notes, and I want to learn from what my predecessors did well and what they could have done better. And I want the community to feel that lesson that I've learned and feel that I'm actively trying to learn from everyone who came before me. So, you know, I think you have to just kind of, also, it's hard because we do all group together, but we are all very different people with very different personalities, with very different, you know, if you ever sat in a room and got to hear us talk about policies, you would not hear 100% agreement. You know, you would hear some spicy takes, you know. So I think for me, like I said, I learned that for me as a younger person and as a newer leader and as someone who wants the best for her city, I want to learn from everybody who has come before me. So, I think about the fact that the St. Louis City has chosen 3 women as mayors consecutively in a row. I think about the fact that, you know, technically, you know, Congresswoman Cori Bush, she won the city. I think about, you know, I've been involved in activism and organizing and different things for quite, you know, over a decade at this point. And so I think for me, that political appetite is still there. And I think even in this role, I get clearer and clearer with what people really desire and what they want. And so I think for women of color, any woman that's listening, I hope we don't ever let a race or a specific outcome sway you from thinking that you don't have a right to lead your community, because you absolutely do. I think that your communities will be better for it. And I don't believe that St. Louis is in a place where we just are going to fend off and we're unopen to the leadership of any Black women. And obviously, I can't believe that, because in my, you know, the ward I represent, my mayoral results were very split. I think it was 48-52, but I had a clear 67. And so for me, I've learned it's really important to build relationships with people. It's really important to be consistent with your values. values, to be transparent, to be present. And I think that will take you a long way with voters, with the folks you represent, with department heads you have to work with your colleagues. And you can never let, you know, I will never let the fact that I'm a Black woman be a liability. I believe that that is an asset.
You talked about some areas of commonality that you have with the older Black women at the board. Alderwoman Tyus, Alderwoman Keyes, Alderwoman Boyd. What pathways exist, do you think, in this term to work with them to advance some of those common goals and, you know, get legislation that can benefit all of the areas of the city that you represent?
You know, sometimes it depends on when you ask that question, because sometimes someone loves you and, you know, y'all are really aligned and that's that topic. And then another topic, they really don't like what you're trying to do and don't support you at all. You know, I think I can say with Alderman Boyce, she's chair of the Health and Human Development Committee. And obviously that's an issue that I care a whole lot about. And we actually have had a lot of great conversations. And I think in this second session, I look forward to me and her being able to work together on some things that need to be addressed. We actually just had a great meeting yesterday with a group of folks from the Continuum of Care and the mayor's office and the president's office. And so I look forward to like working on that relationship more. And I plan on, you know, I can't speak for others, but I plan on doing everything I can to let them know that I have an open door policy. I want to hear what you think. I want to find the places of commonality. I'm not going to neglect my values to do that. And sometimes we will have to agree to disagree. But in my heart of hearts, what I desire and what I think the people of St. Louis City deserve is for leaders to come together and to move something forward. And we can never let our disagreements pollute us so much that we can't move anything through because it's become so toxic. I think in terms of Alderwoman Tyus, she is always an advocate for North St. Louis. That is her North Star. And I certainly don't disagree that North St. Louis has had historic disinvestment. And so I would imagine there'll be plenty of opportunities for us there. I know she did a project with Sweetie Pies that I was really excited to see moving. You know, if any ways, I totally think the North City deserves some economic investment. And I would love to see the population, the traffic, the density increase there. And now that I'm an SODC board member, I'm getting to see, you know, even citywide, what are some initiatives and projects we're doing. And I think there's some opportunities there. Because we are all like borders are really arbitrary. We share a lot of history, a lot of background.
Do you and Alderwoman Keyes' wards touch?
Or yes. They do.
You know.
They do. Yeah. So if you that Shoto line, I don't have the Top Golf or the Target, but almost like right before there on Shoto is my line. So, you know, there's a connection opportunity. And again, people don't see everything. I have had great conversations with every single person on the Board of Aldermen. I've had a good conversation with so of course, when you get to the Black women, I've done that. So I think it's going to be a lot of communication. It's going to be difficult. If you watch the Board of Aldermen, you see how the discussions go. But again, I hold myself accountable. So what you'll never see from me and what I hope to never do, again, I'm not going to disrespect you, even if I feel that you're disrespecting me. Out of respect for the public that's watching that has enough political chaos that can keep them up at night, I am not trying to add to that. My disagreements will be rooted in policy and they will be about what I'm trying to do for the community. And I will hold myself to that line and keep making myself available. And one of my wishes, I don't know if it will happen, so I'm calling it a wish, is that some of those relationships can evolve and that they will materialize in us being able to move some things forward, which I have gotten to work with them on things that have worked forward. You know, Alderwoman Tyus supported every kind of criminal justice bill I did, the one that allowed attorneys to get into the CJC, the one that allowed elected officials to get into the CJC. I found we had a lot of commonalities agreement together there. We voted no together against the TIF. So we've had even the Ram settlement money. If you watched that last meeting where she was, you know, it was her and Alderman Aldridge that were really trying to advocate for North City, but you never saw me get on a mic and say I hate this idea, right? It never came to a vote, but you never saw me said I hate this idea. You know, I really saw, okay, this group of my colleagues really want investment in North City. This group of my colleagues really wants investment in water. And I'm just such a consensus thinker that I'm just, I guess, kind of, some people say new enough or idealistic enough or optimistic enough to believe, like, maybe we don't have to choose. Maybe we could do both. Like, I don't know.
Why that's not both? You know,
that's kind of radical for a St. Louis City thinker, but I would like to think that. And so I think that opportunity is there. And the other thing, we're talking about the board that I was just thinking about today. Almost half of the board is new. six of us
soon. More than half, I think.
Well, freshly new, I'm saying like 2 years or less soon. Because, you know, you have myself, you have Alderman Aldridge, Alderman Browning, Alderwoman Keys, Alderman Devotee from the 5th Ward, and then we're about to have a new 8th Ward Alder.
And Alderwoman Velasquez, too,
I think.
Yeah.
Her. Okay, yes. So almost half of us. And I think I'm excited about that. There's a lot of things that get talked about, but I think it is important in a city where we have historically had people that get in these seats and stay for decades, that we have a time where there's six new leaders from different communities, from different backgrounds, with different perspectives, that are all here to have some of these most important conversations. I'm excited about that. And I think there's an opportunity there, and still balance, because I do think you need people with seniority. You need folks with institutional knowledge. You know, you've seen me on the floor many times get a lecture about how new I am and how, you know, kind of wait your turn. And, well, you forgot to call the motion this way. It's, you know, you need that. Somebody's got to remember, hey, you know, you actually cannot adjourn a meeting that way. Somebody's got to do roll call. That's important. Hey, did you know 15 years ago, the building division actually did this? We talked about this very topic. So I'm excited about kind of the balance there.
So you mentioned people who get into the seat and stick around for decades. I know you just did get reelected to a full 4-year term here, but what are your political ambitions? Is it to stay local? Do you have your eye on things bigger? Or,
you know, I come from a background of activism. You know, when I had my first year of college, when everything happened with Michael Brown, and it really made me start to think about power dynamics in a way I never had. And during that time, I would have told you I would never run for office. I think that it's all political theater. They're all corrupt. It doesn't matter. No, they don't even listen to anything we say anyway. And then I think eventually I just got kind of tired of yelling at elected officials. And I'm like, well, what if I was just one? So it's hard for me to think, because I would have told you never, I'll never run for office. But now this is the second office that I've been in, and I do really enjoy it. It is really challenging, though. You know, you do have a certain level of attention on you, a certain level of speculation, very high expectations, very high demand role. I don't think any week since I've been Alderwoman, I probably, a light week could be 40 hours. You know, usually you're looking at 60 or more. And so for me, when I think about the future, I have to see where the landscape is and what I feel like the desire is. I'm a person who thinks that if people are doing good in a seat, I don't think my name is on it. So it has to be about what I think that I could deliver in that role. And I have to feel that call. So I don't yet have like my eye on a seat. As far as I know, you know, this could be my last term. And then there are a lot of other careers and things you could do. And it doesn't mean you're just impacting your community in a different way. But it could be that I decide in the next few years that there is something else. I certainly would say that I have, people do mention it to me a lot now. Like, I get that question a lot sometimes from supporters, especially now after being reelected. But it's just so hard for me because honestly, the political climate right now is not encouraging. We almost don't have a Department of Education. Public housing is about to be cut. The Supreme Court says that you can criminalize unhoused individuals. Kids in schools that rely on disability money is not getting it. The Missouri state legislator passed repeal, you know, they're trying to put abortion access as well as paid leave back on the ballot again after statewide Missouri voters overwhelmingly ran this campaign in support of it. So it's just difficult. Like, I'm an honest person. It's hard in this political climate to think about like what the future is and what it looks like, because it just is really dark right now. My hope is that the challenges that we are seeing right now will cause all of us to realize we are a lot more interconnected than we'd like to think. That I think the federal climate is really going to remind us, like, today it's your neighbor and tomorrow it's you. And I feel like we're starting to already see that. And depending on how I feel like that impacts our ability to recognize how interconnected we are, it could inspire something else. But it's just kind of dark right now in politics. So it's, I don't know how I feel. You know, journalists are getting arrested. The mayor, there was a mayor in another place that went to visit an ICE detention center and got arrested. Like, we are living in times of just, like, honestly, fascism is on the rise and it's happening, and it's not encouraging. It doesn't feel good right now. As someone who genuinely cares about everybody having their basic needs met, we're doing the opposite of that. We're going in a direction of just meeting the needs of billionaires. And so I've got to just sit in this role. I want to try to be the light for the people I represent and people, residents in the city, to give them some hope. And, you know, we'll see kind of how all of this goes and how that causes me to feel and what I feel like the needs are and what the people in the community are saying.
Politically Speaking is a production of St. Louis Public Radio, part of the University of Missouri St. Louis. Seventh Ward Alderwoman Alicia Sanye, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Until next time,
thank
so long.
You.
If you have a smart speaker, you have access to the entire world of NPR and St. Louis Public Radio. All the latest news and all the captivating stories. Activate our voices with yours by telling your smart speaker to play St. Louis Public Radio.